Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 13th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us as always. On today's show, Dr. Elaine Schroeder will outline 350 Juno's screening of the film Chasing Coral. Kathy Buell will highlight this year's Great Alaskan Toy Drive. Nancy DeCherney will talk about the new Jack. Duff Mitchell will outline this Wednesday's meeting about food security and composting. And we'll find out about Trail Mix's auction. Those interviews, National Native News Writers Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 33 and very windy under partly cloudy skies.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Wisconsin Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation released findings Saturday on the killing of a teenager on the Bad River Reservation. On Wednesday, 14-year-old Jason Perro was shot and killed by an Ashland County Sheriff's deputy. According to the DOJ investigation, a 911 call was made about a 5'9", 300-pound male subject walking down a street carrying a knife. Deputy Brock Mrjenovic responded to the call. Perro was carrying a butcher knife and reportedly approached the deputy, lunging at him and refusing to drop the knife. He was shot twice. Investigators say Perro was the same person who made the 911 call, giving his own description. Investigators believe the teen had been despondent over the last few days leading up to the incident from information found in his bedroom, which investigators did not elaborate on. The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Tribe released a statement last week saying the tribal council was saddened by the incident and asked the community to come together to heal. Support for community members was made available at the tribe's clinic and community center. The deputy, who has worked for the sheriff's office for about a year, is on paid administrative leave. A recent news report reveals a major water source for most of the Great Plains is depleting at a rapid pace. At least two South Dakota reservations could be impacted in the near future. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
The Ogallala Aquifer, also known as the High Plains Aquifer, lies underneath about 175,000 square miles of the Great Plains. It serves some water needs of the Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations in South Dakota and stretches south to West Texas. Decades of debate have put farmers and ranchers who irrigate their crops and water their livestock against those looking to conserve the water that's under there. Reporters with the Denver Post looked at federal data. They say they found the Ogallala Aquifer shrank twice as fast over the past 6 years compared with the previous six decades. Officials say frequent irrigation has dropped the aquifer faster than rains can replenish the source. The U.S. Geological Survey reported earlier this year the aquifer lost nearly 11 million acre-feet of water between 2013 and 2015. Officials say the draining of the resource is causing drying up of streams and disappearance of fish. Those officials say the reduction threatens the livelihood of farmers who need the aquifer to keep their crops watered. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Native American games, movies, and comics were featured at the Indigenous Comic-Con in Albuquerque, New Mexico during the weekend-long event. Aragon Starr is author and creator of Super Indian. Super Indian is a comic about a boy from the reservation with superpowers.
A lot of people have not been to the con or understand what a comic convention is. A lot of people here are in costume, but also there are a lot of fans of different genres. There's people that love games. There are people that love movies. There's actually some Hollywood actors here. And then there's people like me that actually write, draw, and create comics. So that's the whole, that's why we do this. We want to tell stories. We want to tell them in a good way. And we want to make sure that y'all are represented.
Barbara Kahn and her son Merrick say they're fans of comic cons. Merrick was in character as Hot Cheeto Man.
Hot Cheetos are huge on the res, especially with cheese and with a Kool-Aid pickle on the side, and so he decided to be Hot Cheeto Man today.
I love IndigiCon. I think it's an awesome idea for us.
Yeah, we really enjoy the con. We go to like all the ones that are local, but we're really super stoked about IndigiCon.
This was the second such Indigenous Comic-Con event held in Albuquerque. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support provided by Freedom Lodge. Is historical trauma a concern in your community? You can join our Historical Trauma Master Class beginning February 2018. Registration deadline is December 1 at freedomlodge.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on Monday, November 13th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. In the studio now is Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and she's here to talk about 350 Juneau and a screening of a film called Chasing Coral that's going to be on Thursday at the Goldtown, right?
I'm sorry, it's going to be Wednesday.
Oh, sorry about that. Wednesday. Well, welcome to the show.
Wednesday, yes. November 15th at 7 p.m.
Okay.
At Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater.
Before we get to Chasing Coral, the film, tell us about 350 Juneau.
Well, 350 Juneau is a local chapter of an international global climate organization, direct action organization called 350.org. And we came together in May to support grassroots climate action at a local, state, and perhaps national level. And we're working to prevent the worst impacts of climate change and promote a just, which means a fair transition, so all people benefit equally, to a clean energy economy.
Okay, you said you got together in May. Who is we? Who are you?
We are a steering committee of nine, and 530 people who have signed up on our email list. Once a month, we have a general meeting, and everybody's invited to our general meeting. I can tell you 530 people do not show up at our general meeting. I wish they did. But to our launch, we had over 65 people. It was wonderful. And November 21st, Tuesday, November 21st, which is next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, at 5 p.m. at Northern Light Church, will be our monthly meeting.
Okay. Remind us again what 350 stands for.
350. What does it mean? The number means climate safety to preserve a livable planet. So what scientists tell us is that we must reduce the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere from its current level, which is 430 parts per million, to below 350 parts per million. And for the last couple of years, carbon emissions have remained steady and haven't increased, and now we're getting an uptick, and they're starting to increase again, which is catastrophic, totally catastrophic. We have to go down, not up.
Okay. And this film, you've shown some films in the past, haven't you?
Yes. And if anybody saw Chasing Ice a year or two ago, the same people who made Chasing Ice have made Chasing Coral. But I must say, Chasing Coral is even better, more stupendous, perhaps because the underwater world is pretty exciting. And it's a real wake-up call. If any of you are divers or snorkelers, you'll know that coral reefs around the world are vanishing at an unprecedented rate. And in this film, a team of divers, photographers, and scientists, they're setting out on this great adventure to discover why and to reveal all the underworld, you could almost call it mystery, underwater mystery. And it has sort of a theme. It's a documentary without being the kind you see in school. It's a documentary, I would even almost say, with a plot. To see the shenanigans these guys had to go through. I mean, it was extraordinary. It must have taken so much money to make this film, because just the difficulty of filming coral as it changes,
sure,
okay, is enormous. So It really, it's only an hour and a half, and we're only showing it one evening, and it grips your attention.
And how would you describe coral as part of sort of the ocean system? We know it's important, but...
Well, coral, I mean, think of it as the nursery for all life in the ocean, and it's an ecosystem that sustains us and living things in the ocean. And with carbon emissions warming the seas, there's a phenomenon called coral bleaching, and it's a sign of mass coral death. And it's been accelerating around the world, and folks have no idea the scale or implication of this catastrophe.
And it
raging
really is
underwater.
It is bleaching indeed, right? I watched the trailer, and you can see this beautifully colorful coral just change to white skeleton-like beds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really devastating.
It is devastating. And in our lifetime, so those of us who have been fortunate enough to do any coral, just like go to Hawaii, and we can see this. I mean, just like Junoites really know that glaciers are receding, nobody has to have us read a scientific article. If you've seen the coral, you know things are bad, and it's very appropriate. You may say, well, we don't have any coral here, so what's the diff? But you see, the same forces, warming and acidification, that are destroying coral are also imperiling our fisheries. And so what are we in Juneau but our commercial fishing, sport fishing? It's our lifestyle, and it's a major part of our economy. And our fisheries, well, already the Taku River Kings are smaller, much fewer return. It's not like this is going to happen. It's starting to happen already.
Okay, so the screening is this Wednesday, November 15th at 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. What time should people get there, Eileen?
Well, we're anticipating a crowd. We don't know. You never know. But we're anticipating a good crowd. So we'll be there at 6. So come early, and there'll be a short discussion afterwards. If you wish to stay, you're welcome to.
And remind us when your next meeting is.
Oh, thank you. Our next meeting is November 21st, which is a Tuesday at 5 p.m. From 5 to 6, we have our meeting, and we're going to have a special guest, Danielle Meeker, who is a Sea Grant Fellow in the office of Byron Malott, the Lieutenant Governor, as an advisor on climate change. And she's going to speak about some of her research on geoengineering. And so we meet from 5 to 6, and then from 6 to 6:30, we have cookies and chat and fun.
Where's the best place to find you online?
350Juno at gmail.com, and also our Facebook page.
Okay. Dr. Elaine Schroeder, see her and the rest of the 350 Juno folks this Wednesday night, November 15th at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town Theater. Thanks, Elaine.
You're welcome. Bye.
I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace. And that would wipe the smile right from my face. Catch a pull and ride the dragon's wings. 'Cause it's the heat of the moment. The heat of the moment. The heat of the moment. Showed
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 13th, about 15 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and in the studio with me now is Kathy Buell. She is the director of this year's Great Alaskan Toy Drive. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, so you've been doing this for over 20 years.
I haven't personally, but the National Guard has been doing it for over 20 years.
Okay, so you're the director. When does this toy drive start?
The boxes will be out the week of Thanksgiving, and officially it starts the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Okay, and goes till when?
I believe the last day that we pick up toys is around December 15th.
Okay.
So it's only a couple weeks long.
Sounds good. And what age group should people be thinking about?
From newborn to 18.
Okay. And what have been some sort of good presents that you've heard about in the past? Give us an example of something people should be looking for.
It depends on the age group that you want to go for. And I like to suggest to people, think about maybe what toy you didn't get when you were a child that you really wanted, except for the real live pony. Please don't give us any real live ponies. But
I wanted a motorcycle. Never got it.
But, you know, there's toys for all age groups or things that even teenagers out there like, you know, like iTunes cards and
maybe movie cards.
Movie certificates to the movies and things like that, because we do serve from newborn all the way to the 18-year-olds.
Okay. What do you think inspired this to get going? Why did the Alaska National Guard do this? I think it's
started, actually, was many years ago, Toys for Tots was in Juneau, and that's when Alaska had Marines. And the Toy for Tot drive is a Marine Corps just absolute, they own it, it's theirs. Well, when the Marines left the state, the person in Juneau, Maria, who did it, also left the position that she worked at. And my girlfriend, Michelle Shaw, at the time, picked it up and joined with the National Guard to start the toy drive here in Juneau because it left such a big hole for the organizations that it serves. So she did it, and Michelle had done it for 19 years, and she called me last year and said, you're it next year. Tag.
And how do you all choose who to give the gifts to?
Well, we have different organizations because we're trying not to overlap on people who need toys so that it's more even and not just only this organization gets it. So who gets the toys? The Rare Shelter gets the toys. St. Vincent de Paul's shelter, family shelter, the Office of Children Services, JYS, and then at the very end, what we have left goes to Helping Hands.
Okay. What should these gifts look like? Well, actually, where should they get dropped off? Let's start with that.
You can drop toys off to McDonald's, who has been along ever since the beginning of it, out in the valley. Alaska Outdoor Warehouse in Lemon Creek. If you ever want to see what kind of toys we are getting in, that's our main location where the guard is going to take the toys and display them all. Lyle's Home Furnishing is joining us. I'm sorry, Lyle's and Jensen's Home Furnishing is joining us this year. The Imagination Station, Alicia has been part of this for many, many, many years. She's wonderful. You can drop them off at my store, which is Balloons by Night Moods out in the valley next to Juno Pizza. You can take them to City Center Chiropractic out here or downtown here. Les Schwab is joining us this year. They said that toy drives are something that they really like to do all over the nation, so they wanted to join us. And then Robin Lonis is a state farm agent in the Mendenhall Mall.
Okay. Many of those locations have, like, I think of the Imagination Station, what an easy place to go find something and drop it off right there.
Yeah.
Among other places. And what should they be wrapped?
We ask for unwrapped toys.
Okay.
We ask for a value of $10 or more. But, you know, if you're going to do something like I'm doing this year, I'm putting together 40 Christmas socks that are full of coloring books and crayons and things like that. So not everything in there has to be a $10 toy if we go that far. And there again, too, if you have a favorite toy, like the Erector set or something like that. Yeah, that costs a little bit more than $10, but just think what you can
really
inspire in the child. Yeah, future engineer.
Yeah, right.
So, and we also have people like Coastal who, for their Christmas parties, part of the admission into their fun party for the night is they have to bring a toy. And so if your office or business wants to have that incorporated into your Christmas party this year, give me a call at 523-1099, that's Balloons by Night Moods, and I can arrange to have the toys picked up, or you can drop the toys off at my store.
Okay, that's the voice of Kathy Buell. She is the director of the Great Alaskan Toy Drive. The toy drive starts the day after Thanksgiving, is that right? At all those businesses that she just mentioned. I found you easily on Facebook. Is that a good place?
Yes, we have a Facebook page.
Okay.
Great Alaskan Toy Drive.
And you can probably see all those locations, or call Kathy directly at 523-1099. Kathy, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just, I hope everybody has a safe and merry Christmas and happy Thanksgiving.
Great. Thanks so much, Kathy.
You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy, and as the years go by, our friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Hi, this is Amanda Flory. I host Soundings every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on KRNN. I listen to KRNN because of all the great jazz and blues music and all the great DJ hosts that help put KRNN together. Tune in to KRNN at 102.7.
Well, you're crazy about love and I'm crazy about love myself. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 13th, 23 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. With me now in the studio is Nancy DeCherney, the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and Patricia Hole, artist, singer, among other things, actor, and advocate for the new Jack.
That's right.
Did I get
that? Yeah, that's a nice introduction.
Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
Great to have you both here. The new Jack, we talked about it last week.
And we're going to be talking about it. But I figure you're tired of talking to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Patricia here has been in since the very beginning. She is a groundbreaker, and she can tell you why you need to be one. So get your checkbook out now.
Because we might be, you said, breaking ground in 2019.
Yes.
On this amazing new arts facility.
Yes, and we gotta gather up. So, Patricia, give them what for.
Okay. So it's funny to think about this, but 11 years ago, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council was stuck in a basement on North Franklin Street. It was, you know, down the stairs, right? It used to flood. There were rats. It was really awful, awful space. And that changed when the Arts Council moved into the Jack, into the space that it's in now. And think about all the things that have transpired over the last 11 years in that building. And it's really an amazing growth for Juno. So now is the time to take the next step and to build a building from scratch with the sole purpose of serving the arts in Juno. And I'm just really excited about this because this is an opportunity. Being a groundbreaker, it isn't one of those things where somebody ought to do blah, blah. You know, we are the somebody and we can do this. It's completely accessible, even for a little worker bee like me, to make this kind of a commitment over the next 3 years. So it's $1,000 up front and then $3,000 a year, which is $250 a month. And for me, to build a building, to have something permanent in Juno, it is really worth that investment. And that's what being a groundbreaker is.
It's like being a member, kind of, sort of, but you're just really dedicated to the actual structure.
To the building.
This itself
is different in that it is capital campaign focused. This money is going specifically for the building. And but there are benefits to it that are like member benefits, which, Nancy, what you talk about Friday.
The one that's coming up right away is that the groundbreakers are going to be the first people to get their wearable art tickets. The party is on Friday night at 5:30 at the Jack, and if you're a groundbreaker, you get to come and get your wearable art tickets. Groundbreakers will be on a special plaque in the buildings. So if you have always wanted to leave your name, you know, on something for posterity, this would be a really nice way to make sure that people know that you were part of a big civic community effort to build something for the community.
And in case people don't know, the new Jack, outline what it's going to look like for us, Nancy.
Well, they're going to take down the old Jack and reorient it so it runs parallel to Eakin and sort of get more closely aligned to Centennial Hall. It will be about the same size as the current Jack Main Hall. There will be a big gallery, and a professional gallery. There'll be a lobby shop. There will be a 300-seat proscenium-type theater. There will be office spaces for other arts communities.
There will be green rooms so that performers like me have a space and we don't have to, like, dress in our car and then run in.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, we'll be upgrading a little bit. There'll be a small, what's called a black box, but we don't want to say that because everybody freaks out. It's actually just a very flexible, sort of smaller than... It will be smaller than the Jack, but sort of think of the Phoenix Theater over at Perseverance. Unusual things can go on there. Have outdoor spaces so that Brewfest and things like that can spill over.
It's really a great design
in that it's kind of an indoor-outdoor space so that you can pull open these sliding doors and you can have the indoor and the outdoor be connected for when there are times that there are the nice days and there's spillover. And the building has, I did a virtual walkthrough. Oh, that has so much light in it because the designers are really thinking about maximizing its location, and it's beautiful. It will be beautiful. It will be a place that people really want to go to, and with a cafe, right? There'll be a
There should be a cafe. We may have to cut that part, but we're working on that. It will possibly be more integrated with the food trucks, but there's going to be food, and there's going to be a lot, you know. Juno's ready for an upgrade a little bit.
I've heard people complain. They love the Jack, but they're complaining. It's like, it smells funny. Yep, you'd smell funny, too, if you were if you were as old as it is.
You mentioned, Patricia, things like green rooms and how that's going to benefit you as a performer. What else speaks to you about that space?
Oh, the acoustics. I mean, it's going to be designed for performance. It's not going to be designed for basketball. I mean, that's... Honestly, that's what we're doing right now. We're trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. You know, we've got this gym, and we've been doing a lot of stuff in it, and that is great. That had to happen. But that was then, and this is now, and now we need to move forward and actually build the space that's designed for the activities. And I just think that it's going to be a better experience for us performing, but also the audience is going to be comfortable. They're not going to be, you know, sitting in chairs that squeak and, you know, shift and whatever. It's just going to feel the sight lines. You know, sometimes now you get little kids, especially if you can't even see them because the folks in front of you are, you know what I'm saying?
Kids can't see art.
And kids can't.
Performance art anyway.
Right. But this is just to say we've done a ton of things in there and weddings and meetings and all of that. And all of that will still continue. It's just that there now will be spaces that are really, really designed for the arts.
We're going from a gym to a gem. How about that?
A gym to a gem. Ooh, I like that.
Okay, so become a groundbreaker. And where's the first time we can do that?
You can do it right now. You can call over there to 586-2787. Megan is waiting by the phones.
Isn't that arts? 586 arts?
Yes,
does that
it
still
is.
Work?
That yep. still works. No, we're going to be, the groundbreaker thing is probably going to run all the way through December 31st for your tax purposes and stuff like that. But again, the sort of really big benefit for it is to get in there by Friday, so you can come in there and get your wearable art tickets with a little party on Friday. But you can buy the things online, but I think it's best to give us a call because we can set up payment programs like Patricia mentioned. If you want to do it monthly, quarterly, some people have come in with the whole chunk, whatever works in your family's budget.
Is there a minimum that you ask
for? For a groundbreaker, you start at $1,000 and you're committing to 3 years of $3,000. So it's a $10,000 commitment. And like I said, somebody came in with the full $10,000 the other day. Just whatever's fitting into your budget is a good thing. But it is a situation where this building is going to be built by people like you and me, and we all have to pitch in a little bit.
And really, we're just helping kids to see performance art.
We are.
And we're helping ourselves, too. This is going to make Juneau a much more beautiful place.
It is going to be beautiful.
All right. That's the voice of Patricia Hull. Also, Nancy DeCherney, become a groundbreaker like them. Call 586 Arts or remind us your next meeting. Where can we show up?
Which meeting do you want to come to? I have meetings every day. you can come. Let's see. The board meeting is there's a partnership board meeting tonight. But if you want to get information about the whole thing, there's a New Jack website. There's an Instagram. There's a Facebook page. You can call us over at the Arts Council. And we'll connect you with something to do.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Support for this station comes from Juno Composts, providing weekly compost collection services to both businesses and homeowners. Acceptable materials and collection service information online at junocomposts.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 13th, about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm your host today, Scott Burton, and in the studio now is Lisa Doherty and Duff Mitchell. We'll be talking about the Juno Commission on Sustainability and Wednesday's meeting about food security and composting. Lisa and Duff, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Hi, thanks for having us.
It's nice to have you here. Lisa, that's your company that we just heard underwriting from, right? Juno Compost.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, I want to hear about more about Juno Compost here in just a minute, but let's start with the Juno Commission on Sustainability. Duff, how did this organization come to be?
Well, the Juno Commission on Sustainability is an advisory commission for the City and Borough Assembly, and so we cover the whole gamut of sustainability issues, climate action issues, and there's a lot of areas of sustainability. And last year at our retreat, we wanted to pick up food security as an issue. When the barges miss their schedule or there's weather issues, you can go to Fred Meyer's and see the shelves empty. And so we thought this would be a great series, and we're having sustainability sessions on food security this year.
And you're the chairperson, right?
Correct, yes.
What in your life motivated you to become part of this? Why is sustainability important to you?
Well, you know, I have grandchildren. I grew up here. I saw Juno go from 7,000 people to 32,000 people in my lifetime. And I just feel that using your local resources and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and keeping your economy local and all of the reasons for sustainability, lower cost, using local resources, fully utilizing resources, I just think it's a good way to go.
Okay. Lisa, how do you fit in?
Well, I'm just going to be on the panel. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what I do at Juno Compost and where I think composting could go in the future for our town.
And what are you doing right now with Juno Compost?
I pick up organics once a week from residences and businesses and compost them. And then I'm going to eventually have some stuff to sell to people in town so they can grow more carrots and peas.
And so, as an example here at KTOO, we have several bins. Can you describe how that works for a business like us?
Yeah. So in the bathroom, there's a bin to collect hand towels. And then in snack areas, there's a place to put food scraps, lunch scraps, coffee grounds, and things like that.
And where is your facility?
It's way out the road, about 25 mile.
Okay. And it's all out there right now fermenting, mixing, and pretty soon we'll be able to come and get really nutritious soil?
Yeah, hopefully come spring.
Okay, very exciting. You mentioned before we went on the air, Duff, something about how much we actually import every year. Remind us about
that. Yeah, Alaska's the most food insecure state in the union. Alaskans import $1.9 billion of food annually. And so it is a big issue, and what we can do more locally just helps offset that, saves transportation costs, and makes ourselves a little more food secure. So we're doing our little part.
Okay, and so the Juno Commission on Sustainability, again, you're an advisory committee to the Assembly?
That is correct, advisory commission of the Assembly.
Okay, got it. And you're going to have a meeting this Wednesday. Tell us about what people can expect there.
Well, it's going to be at 5:30 at City Hall. And it's November 15th, this Wednesday, and we're going to give a little introduction about why this issue is important and the composting of Juno, and then we're going to open it up for a panel discussion. We'll have Ed Barsky, who everyone knows. We have Michelle Elfers from the City and Borough of Juno, who runs the recycling program, which has some compost components to her operation. And then we're going to have Lisa. We're going to open up to the public to learn more what they can do and how they can be involved with composting in Juno.
All right, you two. A perfect Juno, sustainable Juno, what's it look like to you? What's your dream?
Composting on every street corner. I don't know.
Cool. Awesome. Duff?
I see us as being a resilient and self-reliant community wherever and however we can.
You know, I read somewhere about huge buildings in cities getting turned into these hydroponic, you know, greenhouses and just creating tons of food and very little space on the ground. It's very enthusiastic. It's neat to see.
Well, Scott, I'll just add that the country of Netherlands is the second largest food exporter in the world because they do exactly like what you're talking about. They're pretty small. They have high urban population, and they've just taken food agriculture to a different level by thinking out of the box and thinking wisely.
Very cool. Learn more about that. Think wisely and sustainably this Wednesday, 5:30.
Yes.
City Hall. Where can people find more information on the Juno Commission on Sustainability, Duff?
If you go to www.juno.org/sustainability is the Juno Commission on Sustainability webpage. You'll have the little poster for this program that we're doing, as well as other sustainability issues that we're covering.
And Lisa, if somebody wants to get your services, be able to compost in their business or home and work with you, how can they do that?
www.junocompost.com.
All right. Lisa Doherty, Duff Mitchell, thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thanks. Scott.
Support comes from the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping to reach educational savings goals. Save in Alaska. Study anywhere. Information at uacollegesavings.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and in the studio now is Eric Boras. He is the ED of Trail Mix, Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Nice to have you here. I understand your auction is coming up soon.
Indeed. Our big annual dinner and auction is coming up this Saturday, 6 p.m., November 18th at Centennial Hall. We're looking forward to it. We nearly sold out last year, so we're going to try and do our best to sell out this year. Being catered by V. Cellar Door, and she does great work, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she's got. The menu looks amazing. We've got beer donated by the Alaskan Brewing Company. The Amalga Distillery is donating a keg of gin and tonic, which is great.
A keg of gin and tonic.
They pre-mix it as a keg. And, yeah, so we will be having that. All the proceeds from those donations go straight to building and maintaining trails in Juneau. And we've got a live auction. We've got a silent auction. Got some great things on the and both. In the live auction, we've got two tickets from Alaska Airlines, anywhere they fly, which is always a good deal. Uncruise donated two tickets to a cruise in Panama, which looks pretty nice. I sent a little video, and I'm like, wow. I don't think
they have taco wings.
No, they don't. and Princess Cruises donated a cruise for two for anywhere that Princess Cruises goes. So, and that was by the group that locally represents them donated to us. So, yeah, and a lot of other prizes, lots of art, lots of flight scenes, lots of, outdoor goods. Donated by our sponsors. And I also want to thank Knucklehead Alaska Outfitters, Cycle Alaska, and Foggy Mountain Shop for being our year-round sponsors, because every time you sign up to be a member of Trail Mix, you get discounts at those local stores.
I imagine this time of year, trail work starts to slow down a bit.
Yeah, it's a little cold these days, a little frozen. Heck, when you can't move the gravel, yeah, not much we can do. So, but we were up to that cruise. The crew was working last week. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And tell us about the season.
It was a good one. We got in some major bridges on the Treadwell Ditch, which we've been looking forward to doing for years. And we have a bridge over Paris Creek. So if you go up the Mount Jumbo trailhead out of downtown Douglas, kind of above downtown Douglas, get to the Treadwell Ditch and head north. There used to be a high consequence crossing there. There's an old dam from the mining days, and there was a rope kind of stretched across it, which was tied to a little spindly spruce tree and a root. We rerouted around that, and now there's a big, beautiful bridge in there. We worked with the city on that. That was paid for by 1% sales tax. Thank you all the voters who voted for that. And then going north from the Dan Muller access on the Treadwell Ditch, we replaced the Cowie Creek Bridge, which is the first bridge on that section. That was delaminating pretty severely, so we got that out before it failed. And then the next one beyond that is the Eagle Creek Bridge, which there was a bridge there that failed right when I first got to town about 10 years ago. I remember coming across this bridge and being like, well, this is catastrophic. But we put a new one in there, bigger, better, stronger, and yeah. Yeah, so it's been a good year getting those bridges in, and a lot of other projects around town and around the state too. We worked in Seward, we worked in Cordova, we worked in Hoonah, worked on Admiralty, worked in Valdez. So yeah, we were all over the place this year.
Interesting. So when you work in other places, you're statewide, right, or regional, or do they contract you?
Yeah, we signed a master agreement with the Forest Service a year and a half ago. To work on Region 10, which is the Tugatch and the Tongass National Forests, which are the two largest national forests in the nation. And there's been a need as funding for recreation decreases on the national level. They're working more with partners, and we're a good fit for them. So we've been working pretty closely with the Forest Service these days to get the projects done that they have some funding for, but not enough to pay for an entire crew. But we've got a well-skilled crew who likes to go out and suffer in the mud. So,
what does your crew? How many people do you have these days?
We have, I think, at our height this year, we were at around 12. Uh huh. A lead foreman, two foremen, and then crews underneath them. So,
and I mean, some of the bridges on that trail are pretty big. What are some of the challenges you guys find with building those?
Everything has to be flown in. The bridges that we're getting have to be. Hopefully there's some pretty big snow loads. There used to be in the past, and hopefully we get them again. which is why like the Eagle Creek Bridge failed initially. It was rated for 200 pounds per square foot of a static snow load, and apparently it got overwhelmed one year, so we were putting in bigger, heavier bridges, which is not something we can carry in, and not something you can build with on-site materials. These are all these bridges are engineered and glue lam structures are treated with, you know, preservatives, and so we have to helicopter them in, and so trying to...
It's probably not cheap, is it?
It's not cheap, nope. But we've been working closely with the Forest Service in town, which has been great, and the city, and we've been able to hook up by crook, scrape the funds together to do that, and yeah.
And is the ultimate goal with Treadwell is to meet up with Eagle Crest, where it originally started,
mm-hmm.
is that right?
Yeah, yeah, and so we're working toward that. We have more additional funding. We're working with the Juneau Community Foundation for fundraising to put in more bridges this upcoming year. They've been working, that's their one of their goals with as they move forward to fundraise more for trails and parks, and they've been working with us pretty closely. So, yeah, it's been great. So we will be putting in more bridges in the near future on that section.
I haven't had a chance to test from Eagle Crest now to downtown Douglas. What's that like? How far can like your average hiker get?
Well, it depends on how adventurous you are. The majority of the trail is in good shape. When the miners built it, they were doing they knew what they were about. It's the crossings and some of the washouts that are problematic. So getting from Eagle Crest, the next access is Bonnie Bray, and there are some. There's a big washout in there that happened this year, which we are working on fixing, and a lot of small crossings. There's not a major crossing in there. And then from Bonnie Bray to Gaston Meadows. I got all my meadows confused. There's a big washout in there, and then a lot of small bridges and a three, I believe, major bridges, which we're going to be trying to put in the next couple of years. And then from there, you're pretty well set. Once you get to Blueberry Hills, headed south, it's pretty much all done. There's some small places we still need to polish up a little bit, but if you want to go from Blueberry Hills to the Mount Jumbo Trail, You can
that's
do
great.
The majority
that
of it.
Paris Creek was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
nice.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, it's 2017. Maybe by 2020,
hopefully.
An uninterrupted
yeah.
trip from Eagle Crest to downtown.
Be able to ride a bike without getting off. Yeah, that's what we're hoping for.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you want to support work like that, you can mm-hmm. meet Eric and the rest of the Trail Mix crew at the auction. It's this Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm. It's this Saturday. 18th. Yep. And tickets are available at the Jack, at the bookstores, and online at junotrails.org. And also, we are involved with Mudrooms is sponsoring us for this, you know, I forget how many they're doing, but there's a Mudrooms event tomorrow on Northern Lights Church at 7 p.m., 7 speakers. They have 7 minutes to tell a story and suggest a donation of $7, which will all go to Trail Mix. And the speakers are Dave Noon, Tom Cosgrove, Marriott Weed, Elliot Womack, Guy Archibald, John Smith, and Libby Bacalar. And there's music by the Old Time Jammers.
You don't happen to know the theme. I
the
forgot.
The theme is If Only I'd Listened.
Uh-huh.
So that should be fun. So we look forward to seeing everyone either at Mudrooms tomorrow at Northern Lights Church or at Centennial Hall on Saturday.
Excellent. Eric, thank you for coming in on the show. If people want to find you online, where can they do that?
JunoTrails.org.
All right, Eric. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. You don't need to travel to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, or even to a remote forest, to see owls. Some owls, including big birds like barred owls and great horned owls, live in the city. Owls are hunters, and there's a lot to eat in the city, like rats or even squirrels. Great horned owls favor urban parks, cemeteries, and botanical gardens, places with big trees. They're huge owls with pointy, ear-like tufts, and they roost during the day in trees and hunt at night over open areas nearby. Look for something shaped like an enormous house cat sitting upright on a branch. At night, listen for these mellow hoots. Barred owls sound rowdy by comparison. The barn owl also likes parks, especially with open spaces below the trees, because it hunts mostly inside the woods. It's big, too, with a smoothly rounded head, and it sometimes perches down low, where it's easy to spot. We hope you can find owls near where you live. Take a pair of binoculars, so you can watch them at a distance that's comfortable for you, and for the owl. Support for Bird Note comes from Songbird Coffee, offering bird-friendly, organic, shade-grown coffee for holiday giving. More at birdnote.org/songbird.
Thank you for tuning in to A Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Shelley Delaney will be your host, and we'll learn about the Community Foundation Week with guest Jamie Waste. Tom Cosgrove will highlight Tuesday night's mudrooms that we just heard about from Eric. JDHS art teacher Heather Ridgway will talk about the JDHS art activities, the art club, and their upcoming booth at the Juno Public Market. Taking a look at the weather, it's warmed up to 34 degrees here in the capital city. Windy with a few clouds. There is a wind advisory. A high wind warning is in effect from 6 p.m. this evening until noon tomorrow. So watch out for high winds and all that comes with that. Tonight calls for areas of blowing snow, mostly clear, with a low around 28. And again, that northwest wind around 40 miles per hour with gusts as high as 65 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 34. Northwest winds 30 to 40 miles per hour with gusts as high as 60 miles per hour. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 25. Winds subsiding a bit to 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 45 miles per hour. Thursday calls for sunny skies with a high near 25. Thank you for tuning in to A Juno Afternoon.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.